I mean, for a lot of the clients that I deal with, I mean, it really gets to if they're a large corp that they, at least they feel like they've been under continuous mm-hmm. exam mm-hmm. and that they've been able to work well with the IRS team, and they've generally, other than outliers, been able, you know, to handle the majority of things during the exam. Those tend to be the clients, I think, that are most interested in pursuing CAP. But I think the other phenomenon, and Gloria and I were talking about this earlier, as the audit coverage rates have declined, and right now overall I think it's 0.5% audit coverage at IRS across the spectrum, right? I think some folks are weighing this, do I really take the time and effort to get into CAP where I'm going to have to be dealing with all these things if my perceived audit risk is low?
Right.
And so I think, I don't know that it's as clear cut for me anymore on yes or no. I think that's where, you know, large corp taxpayers have to kind of self-evaluate. What are you hoping to get out of it?
I think there's so much to kind of unpack in there. What we saw with TCJA and the new law is it one of the greatest benefits of us staying in this CAP space, because as you know, we were really weighing it. It gave us an early look at how taxpayers were dealing with some of the brand new provisions, you know, Section 965, for example. We were able to get in early to see and work with taxpayers in real time. And even though I know that was a very big benefit for the government, I think there was also benefit for taxpayers too.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, I think some of y'all's early work with CAP taxpayers on things like 965 has actually informed other folks in the taxpayer community.
Absolutely, and helps us get to kind of where are some of these problem areas that maybe we need further guidance or we need further clarification in our forms or something of that nature. So it has helped us kind of smooth out some of these problem areas.
Okay. George, let's tee up the case study. Do you want to?
Yeah, we're not going to get into this in that much detail, but just as we discuss later on the various procedures that are available to resolve issues and also the development of issues during the examination phase, I thought it'd be useful just to kind of have in mind a concrete example of sort of let's call it a typical type exam. This could be a former CIC taxpayer, could be an LCC taxpayer, even somebody a little bit smaller than that. So basically, we're talking about somebody who's under audit for 2014 and 15. They're really interested in getting current. They don't want this thing to last forever. But, you know, they may have some refund claims that pop up during the audit that they didn't think about when they originally filed the return. Gee, that never happens, right? And they've got sort of the typical kinds of issues, right? They'll have a transfer pricing issue that's factual and has a big army of people looking at it. They might have some one-off type issue. Maybe they had a government investigation, a False Claims Act or something like that. They paid some money to settle that, and the question, you know, how much can you deduct and how much is non-deductible is a fine or penalty. And they might have some really, really technical issue that requires some legal advice from within the service or whatever. So, you know, typical kind of situation that we all deal with when you've got a little mélange of issues.
Okay, this will be context for, we have a handful of exam issues, handful of appeals issues that we'll walk through now. Richard, let's start with gathering data from third parties.
So, I mean, we've seen trends where you've improved your relationships with non-U.S. taxing authorities, and you're also using more of the third-party summons within the U.S. to counterparties. Mm-hmm. I think you can think of it as occurring in two scenarios, one in which the party you're requesting the information is sort of on a friendly business terms with the taxpayer, and one where they're not on friendly terms. They're really either fierce business competitors, they're in a business dispute unrelated to tax, and sometimes the tax issues flow from that. And so just any advice you can offer taxpayers to try to help be more convincing on some pragmatic issues and dealing with the exam team when you're dealing with a business competitor or a business adversary for which the IRS believes they're the best source to get third-party information.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen this, and I know that this is real world. And so in some cases, and I always recommend that we try to talk through first what is really needed. So we're looking for some piece of information, right? And we think it's some piece of information that's the end-all, be-all. But oftentimes, there are alternatives. And I think that this full conversation about what is the issue, what is it that we need the information for, to the extent that the taxpayer has some alternative information they can get to, it may not be perfect information, but it can be helpful. It can help us get a little bit more comfortable. And then, you know, I always recommend that, obviously we're always going to ask the taxpayer for it first before we would, that's under, of course, the new law too. But I think that, from a practical standpoint, we want to work with the taxpayers to try to see if to get it as far along as we can with them before we would pursue a third-party source anyway. But sometimes we don't necessarily have to have that exact document. And I just recommend that the parties really talk through what are the different pieces that could get us roughly to the same place.